The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you're able to tune in spite of the elements that have afflicted the Houston area there over the last week, or over the last couple months, right? In terms of the power being off and flooding and heavy winds, high winds. In any event, before we get started, I just want to remind you that you should always check with your current professional advisors, legal, tax, real estate, or general investment advisors that are aware of your unique facts and circumstances to decide if what you heard on this show or any show is correct, and more importantly, whether such strategies or such opportunities would fit with your current paradigm. For those of you that don't have existing advisors that can consult with you on real estate taxation, retirement plan taxation, and the use of such funds in real estate private partnerships, or perhaps you're headed into retirement, you'd like to find yourself in a zero tax rate situation as you get there, well then feel free to go to our website at beaplannershow.com. That's beaplannershow.com. And if you'll go to the forms link, there's a step one, form one, the client profile, that if you'll be kind enough to fill that out, we'll be happy to spend some time on a phone call with you to show you how or explain how we either can or cannot help you achieve your goals and objectives. And I'm often asked, well, what are the types of people that you tend to do work for? And we typically are involved with people that are mature in life, let's say they're 50-ish on up. They realize that they probably don't have enough to get through successful retirement in terms of the finances, because these days, with the life expectancy being 85 to 90 years old, depending on whether you're male or female, that's a long time if you're in your 50s that you've got to bring home the bacon every month to pay your bills. So, you know, we can show you how to invest your retirement wealth, whatever you have, into real estate private partnerships that historically at least have generated above average rates of return. And frankly, while I make no guarantees as to real estate private partnerships, I can tell you I don't know anything that comes anywhere near as close consistently of helping you create above average rates of return with your retirement wealth. And for those of you that think you may be locked into a job with an employer 401k plan, and you see no way that you can invest that money in real estate private partnerships, if you're married and you live in the great state of Texas, there is absolutely ways that we can help you access those funds without quitting your job or turning 59 and a half, which those are the two reasons or two options that your HR department's going to know about. They'll help you understand those two. But in any event, we know some legal mechanisms that can allow you to tap those funds and self-direct those with your own 401 trust into real estate private partnership investments. Let's go to our news page on the BAPlannerShow.com. I've got some articles, several new ones I put up this week, and we can start to go through those. And then depending on how much time we have later in the show, I need to circle back to a couple topics that we started a week or two ago. Actually, I think both the last 2 weeks, I didn't quite finish up with what I was trying to cover. The first article on our list, now this is on the news page or subpage under resources on our Be A Planner Show site, and the first article this week is U.S. multifamily permits down nearly 30% since or of the pandemic or from the pandemic levels, which is considerable. The let's see here. Okay, I got it here now. Builders obtained permits to construct 13 multifamily housing units for every 10,000 people in the U.S. year to date, down nearly 30% from an average of 18 units per 10,000 people during the same periods in 2021-2023, immediately following the pandemic. That's according to a report on Redfin, which analyzed the Census Bureau data on properties with five or more units. Multifamily building permits have dwindled not because they're harder to get, but because builders are seeking fewer of them. And boy, is it a chicken and egg conundrum. For one thing, the elevated interest rates have made borrowing for construction projects more expensive. For another, there's already a near record of new multifamily units hitting the market due to a building boom in recent years, making it difficult for some property owners to find tenants. In Cape Coral, Florida, builders got permits to construct 27 multifamily units per 10,000 people this year, the highest level among 79 metros that Redfin analyzed. Next came Austin, 21 units per 10,000 people. And assorted other cities, the only one that near and dear to our hearts would be Dallas, 13 units per 10,000 people. But as we know, Austin and Dallas have both hit some choppy waters, Austin's especially, and until there's a bit more equilibrium between the demand and the supply, it's going to be choppy waters, I fear, in Austin. And that means it's better for the buyer or the tenant, the renter, than it has been in a while. But if you're a owner, you're waiting for the inevitable. It will happen where the demand and the supply will tend to equalize, and you know, the owners will be back to where they can reasonably make a living. But it's difficult when your average concessions, I believe, if I remember correctly, on most Austin apartment classes, they're in the 6% range, I believe. I'll try to confirm that when we go to a break. Let's see. The two metros with the fewest multifamily permits per 10,000 people are in California, in Stockton and Bakersfield. No permits were issued in the first 5 months of the year. They're followed by Providence, Rhode Island, also zero. El Paso had one permit, Baton Rouge one, Cleveland one. Fresno, Detroit, Dayton, Ohio, and New Orleans also one permit per 10,000 people. That's pretty much ground, the development's ground to a halt in that part of the world. Let's see, let's go back to the deficit. 12-month deficit decreases to $1.6 trillion for fiscal year 2024, which, you know, these headlines are intriguing. And then when you read the article, you start to realize, oh, there's some timing shifts. The outlays from June to May allowed the deficit, the official deficit, to be depicted as having decreased. But if we ignore the timing shifts, June would have had a deficit of $176 billion as compared to $73 billion. Removing the effects of the student loan cancellation, which was ruled illegal last year, the rolling deficit was $1.9 trillion, a decrease from May's $2.1 trillion level. So as a share of the economy, the rolling deficit was 5.6% of gross domestic product, or 6.8% of GDP, excluding student loans. So it's an interesting dynamic as to how the timing intra-year, as it may be, still makes the picture look brighter or gloomier, I guess, in some cases. But in any event, it's still a massive amount of excess spending that's driving that, but count on the good old Congressional Budget Office, CBO, to have calculated the revised deficit. And again, it's down to $1.6 trillion over the last, or the past 12 months, including the $73 billion June deficit released today by CBO. The deficit is lower than it would be otherwise, primarily due to the timing shifts, as I mentioned. And so this article on the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget site has given their analysis. They give it, I believe it's each month, on the rolling 12-month deficit, and they try to help explain the nuances of what might otherwise. If you listen to President Biden discuss the deficit, well, you would think that we had a surplus because he thinks he's cut the deficit by $2.1 trillion, I believe he says, or $2 trillion, whereas just even CBO last month showed that the two-month period, I believe it was March and April, the cumulative 10-year deficit went up by $2.1 trillion. So I'm not sure what numbers or what periods Mr. Biden's looking at. And I think he forgets about all the student loan forgiveness and all the Welcome to America cash cards that are being passed out to the new immigrants to buy their food and essentials. You know, it's kind of like first day at freshman day at college now, the way we're so giving to the new immigrants hitting our shores or our borders, the case may be here in Texas. let's see. We've got another article on spending, appropriations, appropriations watch for fiscal year 25. That would be the next budgetary cycle. And it's already in full bloom. In both the House of Representatives and the Senate has begun. The Fiscal Responsibility Act caps total base discretionary spending at $1.606 trillion for 2025, a 1%, that was the agreement, above the fiscal year 2024 caps, with base defense spending capped at $895 billion and base non-defense spending capped at $711 billion. In addition to the official caps, lawmakers will need to contend with whether to adopt side deals agreed to alongside the Fiscal Responsibility Act of June 2023 and then revised in January 2024. The CRFB tracks these appropriations machinations as they move from committee to committee or committee to the House and Senate floor and onto the president's desk. It's quite an undertaking that they take on. We're very fortunate we have such a vast reservoir of knowledgeable budgetary experts that do this pretty much for free. I mean, you and I have access to all of this information without charge. It's pretty amazing. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our first break, and we will return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer you better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at nprross.com. Nathan at nprross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and big dreams. And there are many just like me.
with big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were talking about some of the federal budget news that the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget is tracking. They've got some new articles on their website about the appropriation and or appropriations for next fiscal year. It'd be fiscal year 2025, and the work is already starting now. They're already jostling and on the floor of Congress to get their pet projects funded, and they've got less and less discretionary funds to work with. And why might that be, you ask? Well, it's because the debt is spiraling out of control, the cumulative federal debt, to where now interest expense here for the year, the fiscal 2024 year, which is ending this coming December, for the first time we will exceed the $1.1 trillion mark, at least according to the current projections. And I think that that's, even if we were to get a rate cut here later this year, there's talk now that perhaps the September Fed meeting might result in that. I don't know how likely that is. I think the Federal Reserve Board is looking at more than just some of the inflationary data. I think they're seeing the unemployment rate tick up a bit. Not that that necessarily means that you wouldn't get a rate hike. In fact, I think they need unemployment to tick up a little bit to, a rate cut. I think they need it to kick up a bit to justify, or in part, use that to justify cutting the interest rates. But you know, it's a mixed blessing. You know, it's too bad that layoffs have to occur before there's enough indicators that inflation wouldn't kick up if we lowered the interest rates, because it would spur significant economic activity, which starts the cycle all over again. And so I don't know. It's a tough position to be in, I think. I mean, I don't begrudge the Fed board members that are in that position, but, you know, there's a reason they get paid the big bucks, right? And unfortunately, I tend to agree with various business people out there that are a lot smarter than I am, that if the Fed would just get out of the way effectively and let the market dictate rates, you know, we would probably be better off, I think. But in any event, back to what I was saying about the interest rate, and I mean, not the interest rate, the cumulative interest and the amount of interest that we're paying. Again, for the first time in the history of our country, the interest expense for the fiscal year ending September of 2024 will be over the $1 trillion mark. And right now, you know, real time here throughout the year, we are in a neck-and-neck race with the defense level of spending, which is hard to fathom, that we're, by the end of the year, we will have passed the of expenditure on defense. It's insane. And that would put us in, interest would be in the third spot in terms of the largest components of the U.S. Budgetary expenditure. And, you know, if you think that's bad, fast forward to 2034, and interest expense will be in the number one position of the federal budget expenditure. And I don't know, folks, if you don't think that's problematic, I'm not sure. Maybe, you know, you've been in situations that were this dire financially. Maybe you work for a company that was spending, you know, 150% or more of what they were bringing in. They're probably not still around, I wouldn't think, unless it was a quasi-government agency. Maybe you could get away with that. But in any event, it's hard to fathom just how much we're spending on interest and how that's going to continue. And again, our annual deficit is poised to reach, and again, this is according to Congressional Budget Office, you know, the umpire that calls the balls and strikes for our government's legislative transactions, if you will, new legislation. They look at what the impact of such legislation will be on our economy. And back in February of this year, they released their 10-year budget and economic outlook report. It's already been adjusted for the extra $2.1 trillion that I mentioned since that report came out in February. But in any event, they show that debt will reach a record 116% of GDP by 2034. They suggest that the federal debt, now think about this number. In 10 years, the federal debt held by the public will grow by $21 trillion over the next decade, reaching $48 trillion by the end of fiscal year 2034. Debt will grow from 97% of GDP in 2023. And by the way, I would tell you that a lot of economists say that number is much higher. There's a difference of opinion in terms of the assumption set that's being used by multiple parties. I've seen some economists that say we're already spending 130 to 150% of gross domestic product or product. And it's problematic. I mean, you don't have a great nation if you do that very long, because everything starts to suffer. Your budget deficit becomes a security risk, because you can't spend necessary funds if you were to, for instance, get involved in multiple military skirmishes around the world. I guess that would never happen now, would it? We would never be in those situations. Not like we are right now or getting ready to be once China, as Mr. Trump would say, advances on Taiwan, maybe the Philippines. They're you know, using water cannons now. They may be real bullets, real missiles and grenades, etc. Soon in the South China Sea, you know, where they've built a group of fake islands to extend their borders out into what used to be fishing waters of the Philippines, who are none too happy about that. But in any event, we're certainly spread thin now, and I think we're up to, if I remember correctly, somewhere in the $200 billion range, with the $60 billion that Mr. Biden just committed to Ukraine, I believe, here a week or two ago. And it's just hard to believe how fast that number has grown up to, again, somewhere in that $200 billion range. In any event, according to the CBO, deficits will reach $2.6 trillion by 2034. Deficits will total 5.7% of GDP. That's $20 trillion over the next decade, and will reach 6.2% of GDP, $2.6 trillion by 2034. That's a lot of negative spending. That's our annual budgetary deficit is what we're talking about. Spending and revenue will remain far apart, continuing on here with this article. Spending will grow from 22.7% of GDP in 2023 to 24.1% by 2034, while revenue will grow from 16.5% of current GDP in 2023 to 17.1% in 2025, and then rise to 17.9% of GDP by 2034, after large parts of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expire. Interest costs will explode. After nearly doubling from $345 billion in 2020 to $659 billion in 2023, interest costs will double to $1.3 trillion by 2031 and reach $1.6 trillion, a record 3.9% of GDP, by 2034. Interest costs have already passed Medicaid and will exceed the cost of defense and Medicare this year. The major trust funds for those pools of money, the Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, are approaching insolvency. The Highway Trust Fund will deplete its reserves by 2028. Social Security's Retirement Trust Fund will be insolvent by 2033. And the Medicare Hospital Insurance Trust Fund will run out of cash by the mid-2030s. Upon insolvency, all three face across-the-board cuts. These are already rules that are baked in to the statute, and I don't understand exactly the Medicare cut. I mean, I know it's extreme, but I can tell you the Social Security cut will be across-the-board somewhere between 23 and 25%. Depends on a couple of to-be-determined facets of that calculation. But just call it a 25% cut. Every Social Security recipient, statutorily, by law, already in place, unless Congress does something to fix the issue, will be seeing their checks cut by 25%. Let's see. The FRA, that's the act that I was mentioning earlier, the, let's see, what do we call that, the Fiscal Responsibility Act, does show, let me see here, just do some math, it's now projecting, we'll borrow $1.4 trillion less between 2024 and 2033 than it did in its estimate a year ago. The Fiscal Responsibility Act, by the way, was the FRA. Other factors, including higher interest rates and stronger economic growth, were largely offsetting some of the savings that we think or we thought we might have. The economy will normalize while interest rates remain high. CBO projects inflation will return close to its 2% target this year, and unemployment will stabilize at about 4.4% per year. Meanwhile, interest rates will remain high, with 10-year treasury yields at 4.1% by the end of the budget window. With debt approaching record levels and interest cost exploding, lawmakers should come together to enact significant deficit reduction or support a special process to do so. And something will have to happen because by the years 2028, 29, 30, somewhere in that range, depending on inflation and depending on our interest rates between now and then, we will have spent the remaining piece of the discretionary piece of the federal budget. Let's do this. It's time for another break. Let's go ahead and take that now, and we'll come back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make the
okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I want to pivot now and let's talk about a typical multifamily project that you might consider investing in, specifically if you have retirement money that you've got some time to let accumulate the profits of to where you don't really need to take the money this minute. And actually this one that I'm going to discuss is a relatively short term in duration, so it might still fit that need. But before I get started with that, I just want to mention that I am not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. If you need that advice, as we mentioned at the top of the show, strongly recommend that you engage with a professional advisor who's familiar with your facts and circumstances. I'm not, unless you happen to be a client, then it's likely that I am, and we may need to update some of your personal balance sheet info. But in any event, the real estate private partnership syndications that we talk about and consult on with our clients, like the one I'm getting ready to discuss, just for the uninitiated that might be listening, we refer to these real estate private partnership syndications as REPs, is the acronym, and they involve multiple investors passively pooling their funds in a partnership under the United States Securities Exchange Commission's crowdfunding statute. And the key word, perhaps, in that sentence is passively. We're not talking about a situation where you're going to go find a property, although we do like that now for certain people. We'll talk about small apartments more ongoing, but we're talking about a group of maybe 100 to 150 people that you join. There will be usually one party that's the, quote, lead partner or syndicator or sponsor, the several names that apply to that role. And they're the ones that have gone out and located a property. They've, by the time you hear about it, they will have already undertaken some due diligence. They'll have some idea of whether that property has enough upside, both in terms of the operations and or the exit, when you would sell the property, to return the partners their money plus a gain. And if that's not the case, well, you might ask, well, why would I invest in that transaction? And I would agree with you. The problem is you're rarely going to hear a syndicator that's trying to raise money, including some from yourself, tell you that they're not quite sure that property is going to make any money. That happens, and that's one of the possible outcomes. If you looked across the continuum of what might happen, it goes all the way from make a lot of money to possibly lose a lot of money, and then many drop-off points in between. And that's where you would have to know enough about the projections that have been offered and understand the market where that property is located, what the average rental growth rate is presently that's going on there, to understand, are you being fed a straight story? Does the syndicator really have an idea of what's really going on in the market? Have they done transactions in that market before where they've been to the finish line more than a couple times? But in any event, you know, the ability for you to participate without having to go do the heavy lifting. You don't have to find it. You don't have to get the financing for it. You don't have to engage the contractors to renovate it, the leasing staff to lease it up, or the maintenance folks to keep the property in good operating condition. That's all handled by the lead partner, and you're basically putting your capital into the deal, and hopefully in exchange for getting checks back out. And again, there's no guarantees, and I even tell you that, you know, when we talk about these syndications, I don't ever want you to forget that we don't sell these investments, nor do we recommend or promote specific investments, syndicators, sponsors, or lead partners, but rather we assist your understanding in what you're signing up for mathematically, pro forma data-wise, should you move forward? And I know that a lot of the motivational gurus out there that are trying to sell you expensive memberships, they tend to downplay the risk involved. Well, we don't downplay the risk. We try to show you whether or not the risk is rational given the potential returns that you might make on the investment. And it's more of a scientific or math-oriented approach rather than a rah-rah, let's feel good about jumping into the pool here in the deep end, even though the water may not be very deep. And we want to be careful that you understand exactly what you're signing up for and whether or not the pro forma projections you've been given are rational. But all that said, I want to talk about a transaction that is out on Realty Mogul. It's a 506C offering, I believe. And by the way, since we're talking about perhaps first-time listeners or newbies listening in, 506B and 506C are the two sections of the crowdfunding statute that most transactions are offered under, or most that you'll run across. 506B allow non-accredited, up to 35 non-accredited investors. Those are folks with generally with less than $1 million net worth, not counting your residents, or those that earn a couple hundred to $300,000 a year for three straight years, versus the 506C offering, which is only offered to those that have over $1 million in net worth, not counting their home, and they make, again, they can still make the same amount of income if that's how they qualify, but the SEC doesn't worry too much about their financial sophistication if they have the net worth to qualify. And then just because you're non-accredited doesn't still give you the green light to invest. You've got to be sophisticated. That word's not really well defined by the SEC, but suffice it to say that if you join certain mentor groups that have educational tracks, or if you work with a CPA such as ourselves that are knowledgeable about syndication analysis and rules, etc., that you will be deemed to be sophisticated. But in any event, this investment on Realty Mogul, I believe I read where it's a 506C, it involves a it's an acquisition. Let's see, what is this? It's not, no, 132 unit garden and ranch apartment community located in the northeast U.S. Presents an opportunity to assume well below market fixed rate agency debts, Freddie Mac financing at 3.77, just over a 50% LTV, that's loan to value. So if a property was worth $10 million, this loan would have the lender providing $5 million if it was a 50% LTV. Just, again, to help those that aren't used to looking at these mathematics with a little assist. Let's see. The property features a desirable unit mix with all two twos, two bedroom, two bath, 45% of which are ranch style homes with, with attached direct access garages, and target rents are set at a significant discount to home ownership, which that's pretty much the case everywhere in the U.S. now. I don't think that's anything special to this area, although it is good if you're the owner of multifamily units, you'd sure like to be in a position where it's cheaper to rent your units than it is to go buy a home. And that's a real flip-flop from where it was 4, 5, 6 years ago. This property is ideally situated adjacent to a major interstate and near major employment centers, within a 15-minute drive to the downtown area and 20 minutes to a new semiconductor facility that will generate more than 20,000 jobs. So this property seems to be the type of location that we yearn for. Better locations stay more fully occupied and appreciate faster. And it's all part and parcel. A property that's fully occupied tends to be one that makes money. And if it makes money, if it has a strong net operating income, its value goes up faster than one that's going the opposite direction, obviously. This property is within a school district that boasts one of the highest graduation rates in the country and has a leading gifted student program. So it's a very desirable area with desirable education, with desirable employment. That's what we look for. And in any event, let's look at, just in brief, let's see if I've got a quick management background piece. It's operated by REM. It's Realty Mogul Communities. It's a sister company to Realty Mogul, one of the leading online platforms for real estate investing. And this REM Communities has grown its portfolio to over 2,000 multifamily units. Not huge, but it shows they've done it before. They've been in the game. 2,000 units worth nearly $375 million. So not insignificant, and it's not like they're newbies cutting their teeth. They've got examples of the track record here. Looks like they've been involved in approximately 20 to 25 transactions. How would one invest, assuming you were wanting to invest your retirement money? This would be typically an ideal scenario where you're passive. They'll accept 401 or IRA money. And I guess we're right here at the edge of the show, so we're probably going to have to pick up on this topic next week. Let's hold that thought. So let's say that we found a transaction and now we want to move to the next step and perhaps invest. And so we'll pick up with that on Sunday morning's show, assuming the power's on, at 7 a.m. right here on AM 700 KSEV. Thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.